Okay. I got other complaints about the shul, but I can't hear the questions from the audience. No matter what you...
The questions from the audience are not an important thing.
No, no, but no matter
what... The audience is one of the most important questions. I listened for an hour and a half. I sat there taking notes. I'm hoping we got right here.
Okay, and Nehemiah came 9 o'clock at night. He thinks that a man of 74 can teach at night. All right, I feel complimented. Today is January 29th, 2012. And Natal, do me a favor, close the door. And I want to say hello to those in front of me and those that are listening across the vast expanse of the entire world. First of all, I just want to mention my Talmud, Dr. Alan Blau, thought he had tracked down David Shulman. I just want to tell you that my nephew, who lives in Efrat, made every attempt to find the J.D. Shulman, and there is no one listed with a phone or listed as living in Efrat. So I just want to mention that to Alan. Now, last week's shiur on Sunday was extremely important. I don't want to minimize the issue we touched upon, and we will come back to it in the future, Be'ezrat Hashem, in much greater detail, halacha l'maisa. One second. So last week, what did we do? We went into the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, and the whole concept of crystallization. And what crystallization means is that you simply reach a certain point where a Talmud Chacham, you feel that the Machloket is over. The Rebbe, we spoke about this, and everything I said last week is based upon both public shiurim I heard from the Rav, and by the time I knew a little bit how to learn, in the private conversation with the Rav for hours on the topic. Today, of course, I would meet with the Rav and I could even learn a little better than I could in 78, but that's the way life works. A chassid doesn't have a problem. When he's young, the Rebbe is old. When the chassid is old, the Rebbe is young. But a litvak has a problem because we have a Rebbe once in our lives and that's it. A chabad has a problem because there's not a new Rebbe. So because there's no new Rebbe, they're trying to keep the previous Rebbe alive, which of course creates problems, but that's not for now. Now, the whole question of crystallization, as I explained, it's not put to a vote. It's everyone knows today you cannot turn lights on in Yantif. 100 years ago, 50 years ago, there were many matirim, both Svadisha matirim, Eidot HaMizrach, Chassidic matirim. Well, a microphone on Shabbos is different to a certain degree because it's a political issue as well. And here the issue comes up, what about the new microphone, the Tzomet microphone? I can tell you that the number of shuls have it in America, and I davened in one of these shuls. I was scholar in residence, and I was blown away by the way it works because you don't know there's a microphone, but this is a shul that during the year has 50 people Shabbos. During the summer, from June through October, it has 700-800 people Shabbos. So they build on two tremendous tents on either side of the shul, and they use a Tzomet system, and it's unbelievable to hear the way it works. The Tzomet system, halachically, in my humble opinion, is not a halachic problem. Whatever Tzomet does, they do the Eila Li'Eila. The question there is a political question, and I've been asked the question, and I can't really answer. People have asked me from England, was the Rav's opposition to the microphone of 60, 70 years ago, which Simchat Talibah, I have the original Sefer where he's Martin, and he has letters from experts on microphones, Gentiles, and he was a big Talmud Chacham. Rav Simcha Levi was a Talmud of the Mechita, and he was a Musmach of the Yeshiva out of the late 20s. And the Rav was opposed. But there's no question he was opposed on halachic grounds. What about politically? What does politically mean? If we're matir a microphone, we're like a conservative temple already. Would he be opposed today to the Tzomet system? My gut reaction is no, but I can't tell you definitely because the Rebbe is not alive and I don't want to be like some of my colleagues who will tell you exactly what the Rav will say about problems that are coming 20 years after his demise. So I don't want to be an Ibu Chacham, if I may use that expression. But the microphone's a little bit different, but certainly there's been a consensus here. The same thing with shaving. If anyone tells you you can't use an electric shaver, he's lost track of the halakhic literature written on the topic. Whether or not you should shave is a different question. Does a Jew have to have a beard? I only know one thing, and no one has to follow my example because I'm from a different generation. If you guys don't tell me I look like a slob tomorrow, I'm going to be very upset with you. But I can only tell you one thing, Daniel, very simply. You know that I'm a bit of a makubal. I go back in time. I go ahead in time. Once in a while, I go and I study Masilt Yesharim with the Ramchal. And I can tell you the Ramchal did not have a beard. And even in the right-wing papers, they cannot hide the fact that the Ramchal did not have a beard. So if the Ramchal didn't have a beard, I'm in good company. But that's nothing to do, halacha lemaisa, with your generation. Okay, and the Yiskimalem Kol Yisrael, it's a very powerful concept, but it's a nebulous concept, because it's not like an election. It's, and I quoted to you the Mashon, I quoted to you Rabbi Yosef Weiss, and it's a wonderful concept, a wonderful verb, Makshina Olam. And he asked Rabbi Weiss, what's the Mashon talking about? Makshina Olam? Who gives a hoot on Amsterdam Avenue in Washington Heights? And he said to me, Makshina Olam, the Olam that cares. And that's a powerful thought. Now, and then I got involved with the power of the Shulchan Aruch, and we got involved with Lopez Cardoza. And again, Yitzchak is, Rabbi Rubin is absolutely right. Lopez Cardoza is an Orthodox Jew. He's a product of right-wing yeshiva. Somehow, many a product of right-wing yeshiva later in life rebels against the halachic rigidity, if I can use their term. And I don't have to give you too many examples. We all know Rabbi Irwin Greenberg, Yitz Greenberg. We all know Rabbi Duvi, David Hartman. We all know Lopez Cardoza. Some of you have heard lectures from him, and I know him very well. And in that essay, it is the antithesis of the halachic concept, the halachic process. Because if youth says they don't like halacha, they like Beit Shammai instead of Beit Hillel, they like, I don't know, Rabbi Meir instead of Rabbi Yehuda, they like this opinion, Rish Lakish instead of Rabbi Yochanan, it's the end of Yiddishkeit. And the two proofs that the Rabbi Lopez Cardoza brings from the Mashal and from the Michtab Me'Eliyahu, I showed you clearly those are beautiful Divrei Torah, but those Divrei Torah have nothing to do with Chas V'Chalila breaking with the Halacha L'Maaser as we know it. And again, this is very important in Chinuch, at least in my humble opinion. This is a weekend, wherever I went, there was gossip on two topics. One gossip was on Rav Aaron Bina. Everyone wanted to know my opinion. And the other gossip was on Aaron Rakefet. Who is that lady? Is she related to you? Is she your student? And I have to say, Bifneyam Ve'eda, that I was blown away by the review in the Jerusalem Post, because I just complained to people last week that I have no organization behind me, no one fights for me. Here I wrote this, I've written, Baruch Hashem, I've written so many books, some of them, let me be humble, but they are considered classics in their field. And not one word has ever appeared about me in Jerusalem Post. And my new book, which I think should be of interest to them, Israel, Aliyah, Russian Jewry, Yeshiva University, Israeli Army, not one word. And 2 o'clock, I was asleep. My wife gets a call. Did you get the Post? My wife says, no, my husband gets Yediot. I don't want to read the Post. I know what's going on in the Anglo world. I want to know what's going on in my world, in the Israeli world. So she go down and buy it. So my wife went down and got the last copy of the Post. And boy, I woke up and my grandson was there. I'm like a hero. And I couldn't believe, Baruch Hashem, a full-page review, a beautiful color picture of me misidentifying where I'm teaching. It says I'm teaching in Griscola. Have you ever seen me teaching Griscola with a tie? That picture was a publicity picture taken in the OU office in New York last summer. So, all right, they figured out if I'm teaching it has to be Grisch-Kollel process of elimination. Anyway, everyone wanted to know, I'm not related to a Tara Beck. I don't believe I ever met her. She was not my student, as I recall. And I thank her very, very much for understanding what I wrote and the beautiful, beautiful, inspiring review. But that's not important. What's important is you talk about chinuch. And I all Shabbos, I kept on thinking how I compare with the other Aaron, with Reb Aaron Bina, Aaron Rakefet and Reb Aaron Bina. And by the way, you should know I love Reb Aaron Bina. And you shouldn't go to Nativ Aya unless you know in advance he's going to smack you around and he's going to cut you off. But he means L'shem Shemayim. He's a tremendous mechanech. I'm a different type of individual. In all my years of teaching, Malka used to get mad at me. You never had a bad student. How can that be? I said, they're only bad teachers. They're never bad students. And I taught gangsters, you should know. I'm not talking to Kola. I can tell you stories what I taught in BMT. You have no idea. But Baruch Hashem, we lived with them in their ballpark. So be it as it may, that's the Michtav Me'aleihu, that's the Mashal. No two of us think alike. And that's beautiful. We are not Haredim. I am not anti-Haredi. I understand the Haredi world, but when it comes to Chinuch, I am the antithesis of the Haredi world. No two of us think alike. There's no mold that all of us have to fit into. But the halacha commands obedience. And that's the beauty of the whole Sujan and Riven and Yevamot with Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. They had so many differences la halacha, but they were one people. They intermarried, and ultimately the halacha crystallizes. And as the Rebbe used to say, if you study Beit Shammai, it's the same scha, you follow me, Michael, as if you're studying Beit Hillel. But if you act like Beit Shammai, when the halacha is like Beit Hillel, this is incorrect. Okay, then let me go one step further. As we said last week, since the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll come back to the Shulchan Aruch in great halachic detail, but not now, months from now. Since the Shulchan Aruch captured the world, all that has been written subsequently is written about around the Shulchan Aruch. No one has come up with a new order. I don't think anyone will ever come up with a new order. All the Perushim, and you have endless Achronim. I don't have to tell you the Mar Avram, the Shach, the Taz, and it goes on at the Dogome Revav, the Haggad, Hagra, the Kreite Uplaiti. I mean, there's Pri Magadim, Pri Chadash, but it's all around the Shulchan Aruch. Two volumes that caught our attention more than anything else, of course, the Rav Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. And we ended off the shiur last week talking about the Rav Shulchan Aruch. And I gave you two examples, what is so unique about the Rav Shulchan Aruch. And you see, not only was it gone, and by the way, the Rav, and the Rav was obviously not a Chabadnik, although he had great affinity for Chabad, but the Rav had tremendous derech eretz for the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. And What made him so unique? First of all, it was a Gaon Adir. He was the Rav, the Baal Tanya was a Gaon Adir. You know, this was not just a klein Rebbe, a Rebbe, a Shtikel Rebbe there. This was a Gaon Adir. But the Shulchan Aruch has a certain spirit to it, the Rav Shulchan Aruch. He brings in, you can call it Kabbalah, you can call it philosophy, call it Chassidut. And the two examples I gave are fabulous, and you give 1,000 more. I gave one example was, of course, with Yontif Sheni, this big problem of Yontif Sheni, and he comes along and says, the emanations from God vary from day to day. In Chutz Laretz on Yontif Sheni, they're Chol, and in Eretz Yisrael, they're Kadosh, there's no Yontif Sheni. And that's why, if you observe Yontif Sheni in Eretz Yisrael, you're a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, advanced, repetitious sinner, because the day is Chol, and you're making Kiddush, you're saying God's name in vain. On the other hand, if Rakepet is visiting America, and he doesn't observe Yontif Sheni, he is an Amoritz, a Bur, an Enu Yerechet, a Noisvaf, a Trumpenik, a Pushtak, a Poya, and all that goes with it. And this you find, this I don't understand it. Believe me, I'm the nations from God. I'm verbalizing it. You follow me? Chaim, I have to be honest. I'm not a Makubo, but I do understand it. And the Alter Rebbe's grandson, in his book on Hashkafa, Reb Menachem Mendel, the Tzemach Tzedek, explains very beautifully that in Eretz Yisrael you can feel the Kedusha right away. This is where God's presence is. In Chutz Laretz, it takes 2 days. You got to warm up. It takes a little longer for the rays of Kedusha to come down. So, Baruch Hashem. The other example I gave you, ended off the class, is also a very powerful example. What do you do with a Talmud She'enu Hagun? So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, if he's Enu Hagun, you can't teach him, throw the bum out. Wait till he's Chazer B'tshuva. No, if we would act like that today, I don't have to tell you, we would be lacking a lot of students, including some of you young rabbis sitting in front of me. But the Alter Rebbe already writes, don't throw him out, warm him up, be makarif him with one hand, push him away with another hand. And believe me, that's what I followed when I taught on a collegiate level and I had to deal with tzaddikim and bums. All right, you had to let a bum know he's a bum, but you had to also let him know he has a soul and he can achieve Kedusha. And what's interesting with the Rav Shulchan Aruch, he makes the admission there that was the big mistake about Jesus, that the Chachamim, instead of being Makarev Jesus, pushed him away. It's a Gemara that was censored out. And he quotes it, he says, that was a terrible mistake. And halavai, we would have been Makarev Jesus. Now, it was censored out. You can find it where it is, where it was originally. I would imagine it was either in Avodah Zarah or Sanhedrin. But if you take, there's a little sefer chesro, not chashas, that the censor knocked out, you probably will find it there. I'm positive you will find it there. And look into the Rav Shulchan Aruch, look into what I quoted last week. If you go to the computer with the name of the Amora that he mentions, it could be you can uncover it through the Bar Ilan index. You follow? It's not something that's so esoteric. Now, I want to go a drop further. Two volumes, particularly, conquered the world in modern times. Both volumes based upon the Shulchan Aruch. One, of course, was the Aruch HaShulchan, and one was the Mishnah Brura. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan is a very fascinating story. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, the Baal Aruch HaShulchan, was Rav in Nevadak. Who did he succeed in Nevadak? He succeeded Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan Spector. Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan Spector was a Posek Muvhak, if you've studied Rakafet Aaron, I think it's in Chelik 2 of that volume, in that set, but I'm not certain. I have on the Hanif Yard side of Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan Spector, I did a monograph filling in the doctorate by Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shimel, I believe the name was, I may have the name, Shimov. Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shimov, Sefer Tzadik Levracha. He did a doctorate of Yitzchak Yochanan, but he didn't do the Aguna problem because he was advised that it's too deep a topic to do in English. The people will not understand it. But by that doctorate was done in the 50s. By 1996, I think you could write about it in English and some people would understand it. So Reb Shulchan was a gaon adin and he was invited to Kufna. Well, many rabbis try to get a big shteller. I can give you many examples of my students who would have been the happiest people in the world had they remained where they were. But being young and having an ego, they wanted bigger positions, more famous positions, and the big positions ultimately eradicated them with heartache, with responsibility, with balabatim who are very wealthy, and very wealthy balabatim are very hard to deal with because when you have a balabas who made $2 billion, he's going to look down upon the rabbi or the other balabatim. You're going to tell me what to do? I made $2 billion last year. What did you make, rabbi? Remember Babe Ruth's comment when they said you're getting more money than the President of the United States? And the Babe Band said I had a better year than the President. And believe me, he was right. So Reb Zochanan always cried. It's very fascinating. He said, the greatest taisos of gemacht in Leben, the biggest mistake I made in my life was to leave Nevatek. Had I remained in Nevatek, I could have written Sfarim like Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein. But I went to Kovno, and I never, all I could do was answer questions. I never had time to organize. And of course, Derech HaShulchan is a monumental work based upon the Shulchan Aruch, but it takes every halacha and traces it through, and he paskins la halacha. The Mishnah Berurah, of course, every young man in the world has grown up with the Mishnah Berurah. In modern times, there are 5, 6, 7 different editions. You have Mishnah Berurah with pictures, Mishnah Berurah with vocalization, Mishnah Berurah with the Psakim of the Chazon Ish. You have Mishnah Berurah in English. I think there's now a second English translation coming out. There's no end to the Mishnah Berurah. Everyone loves the Mishnah Berurah. What made the Mishnah Berurah so popular? First of all, the style is fabulous. He gives a commentary, a simple commentary. The Lumdus is put into the Bir Halacha. It's a super commentary he wrote. But everyone can follow the Mishnah Berurah and understand what he's paskening without too much difficulty. But the Mishnah Berurah had another fact going for him. He was a folk tzaddik. In the Litvische Welt, we never had anyone in the 20th century so captivated the world that everyone loved him. I had Rebbeim from Shanghai who used to boast to me that they were at the Chofetz Chaim's Levaya. You understand? Now, I think what I'm telling you, I'm going to boast I was at someone's Levaya. But these were little kids at the time. They had just come to Mir. They were 17, 18. That they were able to be at the Chofetz Chaim's Levaya, they were in awe for the rest of their lives. And he was a tzaddik. The stories are legendary about the Mishnah Berurah. I don't have to tell you. The best story is the anecdotal one, where they had claim, some people will believe this. I don't believe it, but the story, it's an anecdote. Like the Rebbe said, the stories we tell about Gedol Yisrael, Rebbe used to say, they may not always be true, but the fact that you spoke this way about Gedol Yisrael shows you what they thought about Gedol Yisrael. So there's a story that the Chofetz Chaim met Reb Chaim Briska. And Reb Chaim said to the Chofetz Chaim, "Fa'ayat tzidkis hatiat gedapsai megon," that for your tzidkis, you're such a tzaddik, you should be a greater gong. And the Chofetz Chaim Labriyut said to Reb Chaim, "For your ga'onis hatiat gedapsai a greater tzaddik," that for your guidance, you should be a bigot tzaddik. I don't have to tell you the Chofetz Chaim was. Now, there is a marked difference between the approach of the Orech HaShulchan and the approach of the Chofetz Chaim. Now, we will come back to this next year in great detail when we deal with the Eruvin controversy over which Jews were slaughtered and still being slaughtered in Brooklyn, in London, and in some other places on the Jewish map. And I just want to make the point briefly now for the sake of finishing this part of the lecture. The Chofetz Chaim was not so much a posek as a malakid. Chofetz Chaim put together shitot, sided achronim, added them up. Sometimes what he didn't do with the Mishnah Berurah, he went into more detail in the Be'ir Halacha. The Orech HaShulchan was a posek. He was not a malakid. He takes the Gemara, he takes the Rambam, he takes the Rishonim, he analyzes, and then he'll reach a decision, halacha l'maisa. He was a posek mufak. And of course, the question is, who do you follow when the Mishnah Berurah and the Orech HaShulchan disagree? So here you have to be very careful what you say, because young children were raised, I was raised too, the Mishnah Berurah. Then when we get older and we used to challenge the Rav and call the Mishnah Berurah to him, wasn't so happy. I could tell you he, if it was a machlekes derech haShulchan and the Mishnah Berurah, the Rav came down on the side of the Erech haShulchan and the Laviyot. And I don't want to go into details now, but Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, who was the posek of America before Reb Moshe, who I still had the schut to talk and learning with him, he came down on the side of the Erech haShulchan. And he gave reasons why. We'll deal with it next year. But it's interesting that although the great poskim of every generation stood in awe and revered the Erech haShulchan over the Mishnah Berurah, Klal Yisrael reveres the Mishnah Berurah. And the answer, in my opinion, is he was exotic, a folk hero. He was, everyone knew who the Mishnah Berurah was. Everyone had stories about the Mishnah Berurah. Everyone was overwhelmed by his tzidkut. I don't have to go any further. Let me put it into context. The story I've told you so many times about Rav Shach. It had to be the late 80s, early 90s, when Rav Shach ruled the world. And they came out in Meir Shearim already and B'nai Brak. No woman should wear a shetel. Shetel, asav, forbidden, terrible. Don't have to go further. And no, you want women not to wear a shetel? You need already people to sign up on the Yisa. And this Rosh Yeshiva signed, and that Rosh Yeshiva signed, and this Rebbe, and that Rebbe. And the main signature is not there. So they asked Rav Shach, Rebbe, why don't you sign? He gave a one-sentence brief answer. Ich hab gesehen mit mein eigener Eigen, als der Chafetz Chaim Yisrael ist gegangen mit der Shetel. And he answered, translation, I saw with my own eyes that the Chafetz Chaim's wife went with a shetel. And if that's the case, we cannot asa. And this was the Chafetz Chaim, this was the influence. So until today, you have so many svarim. And in modern times, Erech HaShulchan, Mishnah Berurah. I give you another example. A sefer that has captured the world has already gone out in three different major editions. Shmirat Shabbat Gehilchata. Rav Neuwirth's sefer, there's already an English translation. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a French translation. I wouldn't be surprised if one day there's a Russian translation if there isn't already. But you see, with all his innovativeness, he follows the order of the Shulchan Aruch. You can't get away from the Shulchan Aruch. Hilchat Shabbos is Hilchat Shabbos, and everything you do, you have to refer, he gives cross-references to the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch order has conquered the world. Hiskimu Aleichem Kol Yisrael. Okay, Ad Kan. Everybody with me? Fine. Gentlemen and lady, may I quote Aaron Rakefet to you?
Yeah. Is the Shemuel issue with
the Ashkenazic world, once Rav Shach refused to sign, the issue disappeared. And Lubavitch wears shekels, Ger wears shekels, the Chassidish Welt, Bells, not so much, and certainly Satmar doesn't, but the heart of the Hasidic world wears shekels. So
there's no issue of these magnificent shekels,
you're quoting Rakefet. I say the rule of the thumb of a shekel is if it makes you look better than your natural hair. If it makes you look better, it's forbidden. If it's equal or worse, I can only tell you a great Rebbetzin who I know, whose mother didn't wear a shekel, when she bought a shekel, she showed me, Aaron, she said to me, I had them put, then this is many years ago, I had them put some white hair into the shekel. So that shekel is permissible. But look, I'll put it to you very simply. If a woman says she'll only cover her hair wearing a shekel, so Zizang doesn't let her wear a shekel. And Rav Meisha, we spoke about it. Remember, Rav Meisha says, you don't want your wife to wear a shekel, but you shave with an electric shaver. You're worried the world will say your wife is not covering her hair properly, and you're not worried the world will say that you're shaving with a razor. So live and let live. But among the Eidot HaMizrach, it's a real problem, because Rav Avadja asks a shekel, and some members of his own family or greater family have been seen wearing wigs. So in the Eidot HaMizrach, it's a bigger problem. I find among the Chadalim, you will not find any women wearing shekels. They're all covering their hair with tichels, and the Rav Avadja would be very proud. But let it develop, let it roll on. And on this issue, I would quote the rabbinic aphorism, the rivers run differently. Nahar v'nahar, each river goes differently. V'elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Okay, my dear students, Rakefet has said many times, there is no life without halacha, and there's no halacha without life. And you got to remember, all the questions we're dealing with, such as a shetel, represent a life situation. The question of Yom Tov Sheni, who would dream that we go back and forth so quickly and so readily today? It's beyond words. I just spoke with the Talmud. He already is planning his wedding. I should be in the States l'sadeh kedushin. All right, it'll be after Shloshim, I'm a Rav. We can find the heta perhaps. But what a world we live in today. And of course, when you look at these questions, you have to answer them. So the halacha reflects life, and life ultimately has to reflect the halacha. Now, the laboratory where this is all worked out is the responsa literature. Sifrut Hashutim, Shelet and Shofet. The truth of the matter is, you already find Shelet and Shuvit in the Gemara. Anyone who's learned the Daf Gemara, Ibar Lahu, but it's more than just they ask a question. You find all over the Gemara, Shalchum Ikam Laham, they sent from Babylonia to Palestine. They sent from Palestine to Babylonia. There's so many different questions. I wrote an entire monograph on this. It appears in Rakhafet Ar, and again, I don't remember which Chalik. It's on Reb Moshe Feinstein's response to literature, where I give a whole introduction with a history, a brief history of responsa literature. I can also tell you that there was a Reform rabbi, Solomon B. Freehoff, Reform rabbi in Pittsburgh. The man was an expert in responsa literature. He had a chavruta with the Orthodox rabbi of Pittsburgh, who was a great Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Zev Leiter. How he remained the Reform rabbi, I don't know. Maybe God blessed him and he has grandchildren and great-grandchildren who hold him b'derech HaTorah, something survives. But he published two volumes that are fabulous. One is The History of Response Literature. It's called Response Literature, JPS, Jewish Publication Society. The other one is A Treasury of Response Literature, JPS, all in English. Not one word in the two volumes that I wouldn't sign on to, or any other Rebbe in Gris Kollel, from the greatest to the smallest. There's not one word we wouldn't agree with. How? Solomon B. Freehoff, Freehoff. You can Google him. His volumes are fabulous, fabulous. Again, I say, how the man remained Reform, I don't know, but it's worth perhaps someone's listening across the world that is a direct descendant.
But it's the proof that knowledge doesn't make you good, it doesn't make you poor.
No, knowledge doesn't make you, but the knowledge of Torah should. He learned with Rav Leiter, maybe in his own life he was personally observant. He was chairperson of the Reform the CCA, the Central Conference of American Rabbis. He was chairperson of the Responsa Literature. He wrote on World War II and problems of Kriyat Torah, and he was semi-traditional in what he wrote. But what he published in scholarship, he was totally understanding and within the confines of Torah Hashem Tamima. Now, with that being said, so what do you mean by Responsa Literature? In the Gemara, you don't find responsa literature. You find it mixed with everything else. When you talk about the Gemara, how do you describe the Gemara? You know, you take a kid, you're going to start to teach him Gemara. How do you describe it? It's halacha, it's agadah, it's machshava, it's philosophy, it's stories, it's history, it's folklore, and it's shelot and shuvat. That's correct. And throughout the hundreds of years following the Gemara, you don't really have a separate genre, if I'm pronouncing the word right, correct me if I'm wrong. How do you pronounce it?
Genre.
You don't have a separate genre of responsa literature. In other words, you don't have a separate branch. It's all mixed in together with all the other rabbinic literature. But already in the Gaonic period, you start to see endless questions are being asked. When they found the Cairo Geniza, among the invaluable discoveries were questions to the Gaonim. And you see, I mentioned this, the dispersion begins. Jews are going all over the world. They're far from their source of knowledge. They start asking questions. By the time of the Rishonim, you already find, certainly the third generation of Rishonim, you already find that many wrote separate special volumes that are just responsa literature. You find that, for instance, the Rashba, give an example. You have Rashi responsa literature, but that is a collection that was done later by scholars from various writings of Rashi. You have Sefer Yasha, Rabbeinu Tam, which basically is responsa literature. And of course, as time moves on, responsa literature becomes an art unto itself. And the greatest Gedolim also wrote responsa literature. You come throughout the history, the Chatam Sofer, the Noldeh Yehuda, the Netziv of Elazhin. Of course, in modern times, due to the brisk derech, Rashi Yeshiva and those who go with brisk could not turn out poskim anymore. Psak became an art. So you'll take, and I explained why, because Reb Chaim, you all know, developed the double concept. You could always see two different viewpoints, two different logics. And he could always explain the case in front of us. I don't want to give examples now, but I'm sure you've heard my lectures many years ago on Reb Chaim, and he could always see the dialectical tension. Well, if you're always caught up in the dialectical tension on a philosophical level, you're never going to be able to paskin. So psak became an art unto itself. And you know very well that in the literature world, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dovid Levi Soloveitchik, Zeichel Tzadik Levracha, was not a posek. He didn't write volumes of response literature. Of course, he had to paskin as a result of being a rabbi in Boston and being involved with the RCA and being involved in the classroom in Reitz. But Moshe was a shtat rav. And as Rakevet has said many times, we have to be thankful to the Ribbono Shel Olam that Rav Moshe did not learn in brisk, did not really learn in a Litvishi yeshiva, so he knew how to paskin yet. And of course, this was the Rav would always talk about his two different grandfathers. Rav Chaim Brisker never paskin the Shaila. When a Shaila came to him, he made a condition of his accepting the rabbinate. Nathaniel, he wouldn't accept the rabbinate in brisk unless they agreed there would be an Av Beitin of stature, who was Reb Simcha Zelig Riga, and whenever there was a shayla, he would tell the lady who came, gay and freg the briska dayan Reb Simcha Zelig. Ekem paskin. He knows how to paskin. Understand? But the Rav Zadar say, the Rav Elia Plushana, the Rav said he knew every word in Shulchan Aruch Yerodeya by heart. He knew every shach and every taz by heart. He was an old-fashioned shtad Rav posek. So you see, responsa literature over the years, and of course, then you take our contemporary generation, look at Rav Ovadia Yosef. The man is a posek on a level that's a throwback to the early Achronim, perhaps the late Rishonim. His knowledge, his ability to paskin, his insight, his ability to take a stand, to cut to the core. This is Rav Avadya Yosef. There was no one like him in the Litvish world or in the Hasidic world today. Long after many names of the 20th century will be forgotten, people will be quoting Rav Avadya Yosef 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, Shikma Lamala, with all that you want to say, and his involvement in politics, and at times his drush up in public, he goes a little too quickly, a little too far, there's no way to harness him. With all the criticism in the world, 1,000 years from now, the criticism will long be since forgotten. But the Abia Omer, the Chaver Dad, wow, Rav Avadya. Now, what kind of questions come up? What are we talking about? What kind of questions? Okay. Certain questions that come up are figments. There are three different types of questions. Certain questions that come up are figments of the posek's imagination. What do I mean by that? Gentlemen, you've all studied, you're all university graduates. Sometimes they ask you to do an essay on a theoretical question. You take a course in philosophy and ethics. All right, they give you a theoretical question for the sake of argument. You come out of class, and here you've heard a whole lecture on ethics, and on the floor is a $100 bill. Are you allowed to pick it up? Should you pick it up? Can you claim the person who lost it already was miyayish from it? Should you look around? How do you... Right, it's a theoretical question. I'm probably the only one in this class who went into his classroom and found 200 shekel on the floor. Right or wrong? 200 shekel on the floor. And it was funny because I would have never looked, but I saw, I thought it was an advertisement. And, you know, they have these advertisements with dollar bills. I thought, gee, this is an advertisement with shekel. It looks real. This is a good printing job. So I lifted it up. Lo and behold, it's 200 shekel. Anyway, Baruch Hashem, I was zeichel l'kayem hashavat aveda. But you see, these are theoretical questions. It didn't happen. It didn't really happen. Okay. Obviously, if it's a theoretical question, it's lahadir Torah lahadira. It's like filling out a question on an exam. Rabbi Miller used to give questions, you're reading Sudat Shabbat, and they bring out a cantaloupe, and the cantaloupe has pits. How do you eat the cantaloupe? How do you eat the grapefruit? You ever seen Rabbi Miller would say, according to Rashi, you do this. According to Rabbi Nitam, you do this. According to the Rambam, you do this. According to the Ravid, you do this. You know, Borea, the whole Shaila of Borea. Well, I don't know how many of you have been served a cantaloupe that has pits on it. I don't believe I've ever been served a cantaloupe where the balabasta didn't take off the pits with part of the cantaloupe like Minig Yisrael, so it's not Borea. Okay, but it's a theoretical question. No, where do you find the tremendous argument? This is the true Matadeshin. Rabbi Yisrael Isserlein. It's one of the great Rishonim of the latter period of German Torah world, the Ashkenazic Torah world. He was already accepted, and he's one of the main sources of the final Rishonim of Germany. All follow his guidance, and because of that, he has great influence on the Ramah. You'll open up the Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya, Kuf Tzadi Vav. It's Hilchat Nida. And you look in to sift to the Shach, subdivision Chaf, and take a look what he says. The end of Adav Nidin, he says about the Trumat Hadeshin. Shehalonoda, shehasheilot betrumat Hadeshin, Asam Oreinu Harav Reb Isserlein Bal Hatshuvat Atzmo V'lo Sheshevalu Oto Acherim B'Piskei K'tavav. And he says that what Reb Damari Isserlein wrote about We don't have to follow halacha l'maisa. He dreamt these questions up. By the way, the question under discussion here is about Shivanikiyam and how many days a woman has to wait before she can start counting the Shivanikiyam, and if there's a difference between a kala and a woman already who is no longer a betula and has been married. And it's a whole discussion. It's not important now. Maybe you discussed it or have discussed it with the Rabbi Bednash if you take Hilchat Nida. But if you look in, you've discussed it.
Today.
I can't believe it. Wow. You have no idea. This is the second Hashlacha Prat that I've had already. I fainted when I, Shabbos, when I, I'm close to a Sim Shas a second time. So I'm finishing Chulin. So I figured I have a few more, a few weeks left. I didn't realize the last parak is so brief. And I take a look. You know when I'm making the Siyum on Chulin? Tomorrow in Shir, when I finish the Hesped in memory of my mother. So look at the Hashgacha Pratit at Chulin tomorrow, and you'll see what the end of the Gemara is. It's perfect for of what I want to say in my mother. And now I'm zeicher to touch a sugya that Rav Bednash just discussed. And here's the Mari Yisalai. He says, we don't have to take him so seriously. He made these questions up. And we'll see next year. What's your problem, Yitzchak? Savlanut. God, you don't let me say the next sentence and you're already jumping on me. Savlanitis, what an illness, and we can't get it out of you. Gentlemen, we'll see next year. Yitzchak asked a good question. May I ask the same question? If a man has a valid opinion, why do you dismiss it? It may very well be that when it comes to paskening halacha l'maisa, if it is halacha l'maisa, you have special siyata d'shmaya. And you don't have that siyata d'shmaya when it's just theoretical or philosophical and it's not halacha l'maisa. And I'll give you the sources next year. It's not for now. Now, I want to tell you something. So this is the shach. And by the way, you'll find other sources where they say this about the Trumat HaDeshim. It's a very fascinating question. Because the Trumat HaDeshin had tremendous influence on the Ramah. We have here one member of the Eidat HaMizrach sitting here, but I think he's already half an Ashkenazi, so he can't take advantage and laugh and say, yeah, all the Chumras come from... But could you imagine Lopez Kadosa now will jump on this and say, so why do we follow the Ramah? It wasn't Halacha L'maisa, it was the Mari Yisraelin daydreaming. But I want to show you, even on this, it's not so simple. Why is it not so simple? Rav Shmuel Belkin, the second president of Yeshiva University, whose name none of you have heard already, and I can tell you that President Richard Joel told me he only met Rabbi Belkin once in his life, as a little kid, so he didn't know him either, and you know, I wind up being the last of the Mohegans, La Briera, I may be one of the few people left in the world who had, as you see from Washington, I had a relationship. I don't want to say a deep relationship, but I had a relationship, not like I had with Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik, but I certainly had a relationship with Dr. Belkin. And no one deserves a doctorate more than Dr. Belkin, because he did two things that changed the course of Yeshiva University's history and to a certain degree modern orthodoxy. First of all, he established Central Yeshiva High School for Women. He established Stern College. He gave women an education. Yes, cynics will say he had one daughter. His daughter had to go to Central. His daughter needed an education. But then again, all the great schools that were established for children. Maimonides, the Rav had a daughter who was growing up, needed a day school education. He established Maimonides. Rabbi Joseph Lipstein had a son named Haskell. Haskell was growing up. He needed an education. Ramaz was established. So Reb Shmuel Belkin opened up the world for women to study, to learn Torah. Whether women want to be Gedolot Yisrael is a different question. If you read the weekend papers in Makor Rishon, there was a whole discussion, and people are disappointed. They opened up Torah study for women, so little women are interested. But that's fine. Women are not obligated. And if you've read the Washington, You see my problems, we don't want a woman to lose her femininity. This is very, very important what I'm saying. But they need a choice. If a man, you got to take Shmuel, you got to take a kid and beat the heck out of him. You take a BMT boy, I don't want to still want to play basketball. Let Rabbi Bina take care of you. Put Raketfit into the closet. He's a sissy. He's a lily. You got to study. Then you come into Raketfit's class. Suddenly I can tell you examples. I can even give you names of kids. Came in shaking, shivering. They had, knew my son-in-law in Hakotel teaching for Rabbi Bina. And now they switched to BMT. They're coming into Raketfit's class. And this kid, and the boys all tell him, this is our best Rebbe. And I take attendance. This is not like postgraduate where you guys can cut me wholesale. This is, you know, collegiate. I have a responsibility. And I say to this kid, what's your name, sir? Eric Davis. Eric Davis, the Cincinnati Red center fielder. Forget that Eric Davis was Afro-American and this kid is white. At that moment, his parents told me I changed the kid's life. His whole life changed. The Rebbe knows baseball. He knows Eric became my biggest chassid. So that's one reason we owe Dr. Belkin a great vote of thanks. The second reason is Albert Einstein Medical School, which you don't appreciate how many doctors. I say about every Orthodox Jew is a doctor, or every doctor happens to be an Orthodox Jew. Wherever you go, you see Jews with kippah, the doctors, specialists. Unbelievable. And you owe it to Dr. Belkin. Until then, there was a quota. There was no Israel yet, or a little Israel. And Albert Einstein Medical School, once the brightest minds went there, Harvard and Yale and every other medical school said, hey, we better take in a few Jewish boys or we're going to be left behind. Anyway, in order to teach women Torah on a high level, they had to organize a department in Judaic Studies at Stern College. He may have been the first one to head it, a name that you no longer know, of course, Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Eidelberg. He was the chair of the Department of Jewish Studies at Stern College. His doctorate, his PhD at Drapsi College, again, Yitzhak, these guys don't even know what Drapsi College is. You went there, right? You went to Drapsi. How many years? 5 years in Drapsi. Wow. Drapsi College, read, study the book by my good friend Aaron Rothkopf called Bernard Rebbe, Build of American Jewish Orthodoxy. Rabbi Rebbe was the first PhD of Drapsi College, 1911, if my memory is correct. Okay? Organized in Philadelphia. Today, Michael, you can't go to Drapsi even if you wanted to, but it's part of the University of Pennsylvania's postgraduate division in Judaic, I don't know what they call it, Judaic Studies. What do they call it? Annenberg, but at the school of what? What do they call it? School of Judaic Studies? What's the word they use? I don't know. But anyway, it doesn't matter. They absorbed Drapsi College. Now, his doctorate was on the Marie Isolinus, on the Truma Tedeschen. Jewish life in Austria in the 15th century, as reflected in the legal writings of Rabbi Israel Isolein and his contemporaries. It's a very important doctorate. And if you look in, beginning on page 39, and afterwards skip over to 51, he takes the position that there is no truth to claiming that these questions that he dealt with were a figment of his imagination. Many scholars hold that Isselin not only wrote the responsa, but in many instances devised the questions as well. And he quotes the Shach that I just quoted to you, he quotes the Taz, and yet this assumption is based on the fact that no authorship is assigned to any of the questions in this book. But he feels, no, that doesn't necessarily prove they were not real. He feels that in some other writings, like Leket Yosha, he does have questions, he does give names of who asked, and he feels that whenever he deals with questions, halakha lemaisa, it is real. It is part of life. I heard when I studied in graduate school an intermediate position. What does an intermediate position mean? Well, if you're familiar with the Mari Isalon, there's the Truma Kadeshin, where you have long Shelot and Shuvot. Then in back, the Ktavimu Psakim, that deal with questions one after another. He gives you answers very quickly. One, two, three. The Truma Kadeshin per se may very well be the Shachan Tazarite. That this was Lundis, this was purple, Lahadir Torah, Lahadira. He needed examples, he needed cases. In the Ktabim Upsakim, those were actual questions that came his way. It's like an intermediate position. But one thing is for sure, over the generations you have had people who wrote Shelot and Shuvat, Lahadir Torah, Lahadira, theoretical issues, it was not real. But these were issues that could very well have been taken from life situation, but because it wasn't something halacha l'maisa, it doesn't carry as much authority as a question that is asked halacha l'maisa. And as I say, this is only an introductory lecture, all these lectures now, I will come back to this in great detail, but not yet, not now. Okay, that's number one. Then there's a second type. There are three types of Shelot and Shuvot. Then there's the second type. Can anyone tell me why Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein, Dr. Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein, one of our heroes in this classroom, why she lost her cool and wrote a burning, difficult, critical letter to tradition many years ago? Why? And all of you know, Tova's a private person. She doesn't go public. True, she spoke at the book launch of Washington. Rakefet is very much in debt to her and very much appreciative for that evening. But she's a private person. To use modern Hebrew, ma pitom, why suddenly did she go crazy and maledict the author and tradition for the article? No, none of you remember. I will fill you in. In tradition, there was an article, he's no longer alive, Professor Rosenfeld. I think his first name was Azriel. Brilliant graduate of the yeshiva. And
is this Lenny Rosenfeld?
No. Lenny Zelichud Mezelichud. Lenny lived in Israel many years. Lenny was in Jewish education. This guy was a top scientist. A number one. And he wrote a whole article dealing with when they started to go into outer space. What do you do if you're on the moon? What do you do when you're in orbit? When do you daven? When do you observe Shabbat? In other words, you can have situations that come up in life, and maybe Ilan Ramon asked a shaila like this. I don't know. I understand Ilan Ramon was moving a lot closer, Zichrono Levracha, a lot closer to Yiddishkeit. Due to Chabad. I understand Chabad had picked up the family and he took them to outer space, a little Sefer Torah. It's very inspiring because generally speaking, the Chiloniim in Israel are, to quote Rakefet, I think I mentioned this in Washington, I coined this term in the army, they're inverted Maranos. On the outside, they are proud Israelis. They speak Hebrew beautifully. But on the inside, they know nothing of Yiddishkeit. Their values are democracy, 20th century values, New York Times, BBC. They know nothing of Shas and Poskim and Torah and Yiddishkeit and Ibiki Gebenkeit and Surrender and Mitzvah and Learning and Bialik and Hamatmid and the Beis Medrash, etc., etc. So you got to give them credit. But all right, Tova was very upset because she thought that this was somehow mocking the halacha. Who's going to go up to the moon? Who's going to be in outer space? Who is going to ask questions, when do you observe Shabbat, etc., etc.? When do you daven? And Rosenfeld treated it seriously, and Tova felt that it was not in place for tradition to write an article like this, which seemed to take the halacha and turn it into something that's not real, that it's not down to earth, down to life. All right, there are many examples in response to literature. What about a sheikhet who shecht when he was hypnotized? I believe the Sholem Meshiv deals with this. All right. How many sheikhet? I don't know. If I'm hypnotized, I'm not exactly going to pick up a knife and shecht an animal. You follow me, Nechem? It's all right. Then Ribbono Shel Olam, a two-headed child is born, a Siamese twin, and they grow up Siamese twins. How many pairs of tefillin do they have to put on? And this is dealt with seriously. So you see, these are questions.
What about an elephant?
There's the Gemara deals with an elephant through the needle of through the hole of a needle. You understand? How do you get the elephant through? It's the pampadita. It's pshat that the needle hole becomes larger and the elephant becomes smaller. And by the way, in tells, they used to deal with that seriously. I want to tell you, it was no laughing matter in tells. Rav Volk, I remember, dealt with it seriously. And we had to keep a straight face. We wanted to pass the course. We wanted to get a good mark from the Rebbe, so we had to sit there and keep a straight face. But I don't want to tell you what the students said when they left the class. Forget it. It's not nice. Okay. So these questions are real.
What did the Rebbe say?
Say there was a pupil. These are questions that are real. It's not someone making it up. But they're certainly not questions of major importance. They're not questions that shake the world. But then you come to the third type of questions. And these questions are life, not just life. They're a reflection of the halakha. They're a reflection of the rabbis. They're a reflection of the balabatim. They're a reflection of the society in which you live. There is this reflection of the economic reality. I don't have to go further in modern times. Look how many questions have been written on Aguna. The self-inflicted Aguna. You understand what I say, self-inflicted. People who refuse to give a get. Rabbi Bernstein, there's a chair right there. People who refuse to give a get. People who hold a woman up for money. Yeah, you can analyze that. First of all, it has halakhic implications. Then it reflects the society. We live in a society. Who's successful? I wrote to the publisher today after that review on Shabbos, everyone talking, no one believing. I don't know the... So I wrote to the publisher, hey, it dawns upon me, I'm entitled to royalties. So I wrote, I realize I will remain a beggar in Jerusalem, if you're familiar with that book. But I added on, at least I'll be a beggar with cake in my hand. Okay? So you see, how do you judge someone? Who's Rakefet? Who's interested in his shiurim? Who's interested in his Torah? Who's interested in all the lives he inspired? How much money does he have? A balabas once came to me with a proposal, and I'm not pulling your leg now. I should take off 2 years to pay my family a salary, and I should study with Warren Buffett. He offered it, I don't want to tell you the other person as he offered it to. Also, he's a great name. I'm a nobody. But I turned him down on the spot. He said, but think of the charity checks you could write. Think of all the zeros you can put after the one. I said, I'm only cut out to sit behind the desk and teach Torah. But you see, this is a reflection of society. Money, it's a reflection of the Fadorbenkeit. I don't know how to say that in any other language. Help me out, Yitzchak. The Fadorben, even you're struggling. No, it's more than that. It's the Fadorbenkeit. You know any Yiddish speakers here? Where's David Pardo? Where's my resident Ladino? Oh, boy. The Fadorben. Rotten to the core of society that a man can torture a woman who had been his wife. Understand? Then you see the reflection of the reform and conservative. Throw Judaism away. Who needs this type of Judaism? Then you see Rabbi Lachman, who with all good intention, throw away a get, hafkat kedushin. You would have never married a man who could be so cruel, etc., etc. So you see, these are real questions. What the Erev controversy. How much has been written on the Erev controversy? In London, where Rabbi Bernstein grew up. I went into his shul. I couldn't believe my eyes. Monk shul in Golders Green. On the wall a sign. If you carry on Shabbos, you cannot have an aliyah in this shul. And they told me a story they swear is true, that a man had an aliyah. They found out later he walked with a cane. This is what people swear to me is true. I wasn't there. And the rabbi insisted they reread the aliyah he had. They wouldn't job say. No, what's the machloket? What? What was an Erev in Warsaw, an Erev in Paris, an Erev in Rumsha, an Erev in Yerushalayim? What's going on in London? What's going on in Brooklyn? You see, these shelet and shuvet, when you get involved with it, it's not just the shelet, it's life. The mechitza question. Oh my gosh, you know the end result of those morons, those mechalalei shem shemayim, they spit at an 8-year-old girl, that they call a chayalet a prutza. You know how many temples are going to be established in Israel where men and women are going to daven together? You mark my word. Read the Israeli press. There's a whole movement in the kibbutzim, the leftists. We want to have a synagogue. Ah, but not with men and women separate. Hadrat Nashim, they made up a new word that the New York Times now explains what it means. Everyone in the world is reading Hebrew. New York Times, Hadrat Nashim. Understand? Ah, the Mechitza, Reb Moshe, America, Rakefet in the rabbinate, the young guy. One of the greatest conservative rabbis heard me speak at a funeral in 1963. I eulogized my vice president. His children were members of the Reconstructionist temple. And he says, Rabbi, I'm going to give you a shtela. I have for you $25,000 a year. You know what that meant? I was making $4,000 from my shul and $4,000 as a Rosh Yeshiva in 1960 from YU. Okay, $8,000 to $25,000. 1963 money. I say, does it have a mechitza? What are you, a moron, a masochist? You don't care about your family? Do you understand? When you get involved with a mechitza, Shaila, the world opens up to you. And I can go on and on with so many examples. The automatic elevator. Can you use it? The Plaza Hotel has 22 stories. You're invited to Kiddush in one of the penthouses. You're going to walk up 22 flights, you're going to take the elevator. See, that question reflects so much of modern life. We build in the air today, right or wrong. Look at the Holy Land. Forget about all those that will go to jail and I hope rot away and they throw the keys away and no one will ever find those keys. That is my dream. But nevertheless, look how big it is. And people want to live high. It reflects life. But they can't walk up. They want an elevator. Technological advancement. Can we do it? What's an automatic elevator? How does it work? There's so much involved here. Gentlemen, let me give it to you plain and simple. It is forbidden for any one of you to look at responsa literature until you are 29 years of age. And to quote the Rama, your stomach is filled with yayin ubasa, shas and paiskim. Can anyone tell me why? Because if you look at responsa literature when you're young, you will never learn another word of Gemara. You will never learn another word of shas and paiskim. You'll be so carried away by responsa literature that you'll be sitting at the Bar Ilan with the Bar Ilan diskette or whatever you call it in your language, and your whole life of learning will be in responsa literature. It is fabulous, but first get shas and paiskim under your belt. Daniel, in your case, you have to become a medical doctor first. You have to become a specialist. All along studying shas and paiskim. When you're 39, come back to talk with me, and I'll give you a written heter perhaps that you can look at responsa literature. So you're three, you see, there are three, you're in the middle of an introduction to how we paskin. This is the third week already, or fourth week, whatever. You know, an introduction means a number of months' work. And then we're going to come. What's the laughter? Gentlemen, you're in a postgraduate class. The high school days are over. And then we'll comment on it for the next 25, 30 years, Be'ez Rav Hashem. Now, so what do we see? There are three types of questions that come up in responsa literature. One, of course, is the figment of the post-sex imagination. The Truma Tedeschen is the best example. Nevertheless, Professor Eidelberg differs with the Shach and Taz, and it's an open question. I told you what I heard in graduate school. You can take it or leave it, study the Mahari Isserlein and reach your own conclusion with Yisrael Isserlein, but remember, a good deal of the Ramah can be traced back to the Mahari Isserlein. Number two, then you have questions that are real, but how many of us are going to be on the moon? How many of us are going to be in outer space? How many of us are going to have two-headed Siamese twins who are being bar mitzvah? We want to know how many pairs of tefillin to put on. These are nice questions, but it's not real. That's why Tova got upset. She felt it cheapened the halakha. If you go to the tradition website, look up under Rosenfeld, and an issue or two later, you'll see Dr. Tova Lichtenstein's response. I don't know whether I agree with her, but I can understand what she's saying. Yes, yes.
At the end of the day, she became proven wrong. It became a
Maisa. Well, I wouldn't say Ilan Ramon makes it Maisa, but all right, proven wrong. No one's leaving on the moon yet. And with Alaska, we have big shilas with Leningrad, the White Knights. You know what I'm talking about? And that's the pre-Yitzchak. If you live in Leningrad, hold on 1 second, in June, when do you daven? Zobzman Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharit is over by 4 a.m. No one has a minyan at that time. So the Pre-Yitzchak's famous Shaila, he was Rav of St. Petersburg, of Leningrad. Do you wait for a minyan, and that way you say Kriyat Shema B'liv Birchoteha, because you're saying it before you daven, or is it better to wait for a minyan and say Kriyat Shema in Birchoteha, even though you're over as Man Kriyat Shema? There's a case of Mishnah, perhaps we can miss some Achan. And that's the famous story. You know the story. That's with the famous story in St. Petersburg. That was the seed of the rabbinate, because the Tsar was in St. Petersburg then. He wasn't in Moscow. All the government offices were in St. Petersburg. So they once called the minyan, a meeting by Rabbi Yitzchak Petterburger, by Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser. He was the Talmud Milfok of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He was St. Petersburg Rav. So they called a meeting of all the Rabbanim. They had to deal with the government, with the Talmud Torah, with the Hadarim, with secular studies. And they finished the serious business. What are Rabbanim going to do? They're going to talk and learning. So they raised the shayla of the White Knights, what to do. And every Rav, everyone got up in the Beit, everyone said a pilpul, everyone quoted sources. And finally they came to the host, Rav Yitzchak Blaser. By the way, I heard the story from the Rav, but I afterwards read it in memoir literature. They came to Rav Yitzchak Blaser, the host, and he said a few words of Musa. The Beit HaLevi went back to Bris, and he was upset. This is Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser. This is Rabbi Yitzchak Petterburger. This is the man they say is the biggest London that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter raised. What the heck? And I'm always didn't say a word. A few words of Musa. So he asked his gabbai, go up on the shelf, go with the ladder. There is the Pre-Yitzchak. Bring me the Pre-Yitzchak. That's his sefer. He opens up the Pre-Yitzchak. I have it in my house. You can open it up. The first question he deals with, 44 rabbinic pages, dealing with this very shaila, with all the lumdus in the world. And he paskin, by the way, better to say and daven be yechidit and say it be birchoteha than just to say shema without birchoteha and wait for the minyan. And they say the Beit HaLevi turned to his gabbai and he said, yetz vashteich the godless from the Petterburger Rav. Now I understand the gadlut, the greatness of the St. Petersburg Rav. So, okay, that's the second type of Shailat. The third type, of course, the most important, is the maelstrom of life. How it reflects in the response of literature. Gelatin. No? All the enzymes. Cheeses today. I mean, this is life. This is life. Akuna. This is earth shaking. Eruvin. Who could believe the machloket that putting an Eruv up in modern times has engendered? I'm going to deal with this in great length next year. It's a topic that fascinates me. Who could believe? I'm going to show you a sperm I have here, blow your mind on this topic. One from Brooklyn and one from London. But we got to build up with tens of lectures before so you understand the material. Fascinating. And boy, when you get involved on that level, you are hooked. You're looking Gemara, wow, how boring. Gemara boring? But compared to responsa literature. Daniel, what did you want to ask? These are problems. By the way, I don't have to agree. The medical issues of modern times. AID, AIH. Do you have any idea the shilas that are asked, what they're doing at Shirei Tzedek? How do you solve a problem of a woman who can only conceive during the time that she cannot yet go to mikvah? Could you understand that? A woman who's perfectly normal, perfectly healthy, but her monthly pattern is different than statistically 90% of women. This shayla already came up 100, 150 years ago. Today, they have solved the problem. But just think of all the medical research and all the halachic research that had to go into solving this problem. Look at all the sperm you have today on medical issues. It blows the mind. When I was growing up, who saw a flim doctor? The most you had one doctor on the west side. He was called Shabbos Friedman. Do you remember that? Legendary figure. Why was he called Shabbos Friedman? He was the only doctor who was Shomer Shabbos. He had a Gentile stay with him all Shabbos. If any emergency came up, the Gentile would take his bag and drive him to where he had to go. And he was known, and he was Zeicha. His son became a great specialist, Shomer Shabbos, and his grandson, you wouldn't believe your eyes, his grandson sought out his roots, say Shtamim from Bava v'Chassidim, they come from Bava v'Chassidim. The grandson, I believe, is an internist, if I'm not mistaken, a long beard, a Bekesher on Shabbos, a Gartel, and the Zeda was Shabbos Friedman. Shows you when you're mice and nefesh, what you're zeicha to. Okay, let me go one step further before we close down. It's fascinating material. And I cannot praise Freehop's two volumes enough. I don't know if they're available today. It would be very wise to republish them. The problem is that in today's climate, if they see a Reform rabbi wrote volumes, no one will touch it. But I have to tell you, we had a very good chavruta, Rabbi Zev Leiter. I taught Rabbi Leiter's grandchildren, Kulam Shomrei Torah Mitzvah. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was an Ungarish, if I'm not mistaken. And these two volumes in English are totally, totally reliable. It opens the world to you of response. I don't know if anything else is good and as insightful as those two volumes of Solomon B. Freehop. Right, well, Braud is very close to Rabbi Belkin. He wrote on the Medrash, and I once quoted a drush of his where he put a yarmulke on so proudly he returned because there was a kid who may take off. Remember? We spoke about it in class.
He put on a yarmulke because he went to Selma, Alabama.
Right, right, right.
He wanted them to know he was Jewish. And
And he put on a yarmulke, and then when he got back, he preached that beautiful sermon in his shul. Listen, it's a sad story, Reform and Conservative. This is why the Alter Rebbe, what I quoted last week, is so important. You can't push any Jew away. Yeah. On one hand, you have to let him know halacha demands, commands obedience. On the other hand, you have to show him empathy, that you understand him. Not sympathy, empathy, that you understand the influences. And listen, the greatest compliment that Jaffe can have, his daughter, who just retired, the head of the Reform Movement in America, his daughter and son-in-law are Shomrei Torah Mitzvah. It's the greatest compliment. His wife claims that she became flim to aggravate her parents, if you saw the interview. But I would like to believe she became flim because I have a whole theory that your forebears plead with the Ribbono Shel Olam that the family shouldn't be totally pushed away. There should be volitzin goel, there should be something left of the family, kanayin hara. Now, my dear students, just as the questions break into three, the answers break into three. And here you'll see something amazing. What do we have from the Gaonic period? No one collected Tshuvot. They were scattered all over. They were in Gemizot with the late 1700s. People started to discover what libraries had, what the libraries in Berlin afterwards, the Vatican Library, Oxford, the great libraries in London. And they started to discover the Gemizot, Cairo, the greatest example. And I often have told you, Binyamin Menashe Levine was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook and Merkas HaRav. And then he got the urge to broaden, to go to Hebrew University. So he went to ask Rav Cook's permission, and Rav Cook was very smart. He saw a student wants to go to university, don't tell him no. But he told him, learn something that will help the Jewish people. And Rav Binyamin Menashe Levine majored in scientific approach to manuscripts, to the Gaonic period, and he put together the Otsa HaGaonim. Unfortunately, he died before he could finish. He died like Professor Liebman. They never finished their monumental works. It's just too much for one person. He died, I believe, in the middle of Bat Mitzvah. You can check down in the library. The Otsa HaGaonim is fabulous. By the way, I have inside information that Ofek, coming out of Cleveland, Rav Avraham Shoshana, they're working on a new edition of Otsa HaGaonim, including all the material that has been discovered in the last 60, 70 years. I had the schut that I taught the granddaughters of Reb Binyamin Menashe Levine, and if you know who Marty Feinbaum is, HaSeifer, you know who I'm talking about? The guy who has a big operation of Sifrut, right where, well, on Rehob Strauss, if you don't know, you don't know. He is married to Rabbi Naman Menashe Levine's granddaughter. If you look into Otsa HaGaonim, you will find very brief Shabbat. You ask a question, you get a three-line answer. Four lines already is a great deal. Ushasha'altem, what the order is on Shabbos morning, how you daven. Two lines, three lines, almost no sources. This is the way they wrote Shabbat, even the early Rishonim. Rashi, Rabbeinu Geshem, these have all been collected and put out. Elfenbein put out Shabbat Rashi. You very quick, very brief. Right? Yashar L'Anyan. Tosfot, you look into Tosfot. Whoever has a question, halacha l'maisa, you'll see how brief the answer is. They were able to write like this because they were supreme authorities. No one questioned the Gaon. It's before printing, these Tshuvot did not circulate. It's not like today, you sneeze in Yerushalayim and the whole world is even wishing you Gesundheit or telling you, I don't want to say. It's a different world today. Then you look into Rishonim already, take the Rashbam, classic example. Take the Ramban, classic example. Take the Marami Rutenberg. You'll see already, look in the library, see just what I'm saying. The Tshuvot already are a paragraph, two paragraphs. They'll be in the Gemara. They'll make some insight. They'll compare Dava la Dava. You'll see that there's Bina, Chachma Bina Vedat, to paraphrase Chabad. You'll see, but the Tshuvot are relatively succinct, relatively small. They're not major essays. Then already you come into the end of the Rishonic period, the Rivash, the Tashbeds, come into the Achronim. Some of the Tshuvot are entire essays. It's Lahagdil Torah Lahadira. They take apart Gemaras. They analyze Shas. They analyze the Rishonim. You can pull out of the Igrot Moshe, you can take Reb Moshe Feinstein and find endless Chidushim on Shas, on the Rambam, on the Shach, on the Taz. Reb Moshe, in the midst of Paskening Halacha L'Maisa, but he is analyzing basic sugyas, giving basic pshat. Even on lines of Gemara, he has to spend paragraphs. What does the Gemara mean? You take the Modeh B'Yehuda, you take the Chatam Sofer, it's an entire art unto itself. You take the Divrei Menachem, with Menachem Kasha, the whole world is there. You see the Lagachava, which none of us can understand, because he says, Va'ayin, 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 and they've worked so hard to try to bring the Lagachava to life. But in one tshuva, he can have 50 different references to Bavli and Yerushalmi. I don't have to go any further than Rav Avadji Yosef, when he's Matir and Aguna, what goes into it, the sources, it's a volume unto itself. You take Rabbi Yitzchok Chanan, the Avi Aguna, the man who wrote something like 163, if I recall correctly. I told you I published on it. It's in Rekha Fed Aaron. He wrote 163 Shavat Lahati Aguna. You have literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages dealing with basic concepts and avon zichro and what does it mean and circumstantial evidence and a simin mufak and a simin beinoni and how you put it together. It's a world unto itself. So you see, just as there are three types of questions, there are three types of answers. But nowadays, because we don't have a central authority, because any name you mention, someone will come along and contradict and say, "Mi who's and?" And nowadays when it circulates all over and people will agree, people will disagree, and everyone gets involved, nowadays you're not going to find a respondent who doesn't give you an entire essay. Some give you more, some give you less. But you will not find a respondent who does not give you an entire essay. So, ad kan today. Let me reiterate, but before I reiterate, I just want to state, tomorrow is a very important day for me. It's the shloshim of my late mother, Hareni Kaparat Mishkava. So, as I've stated, I'm not giving the regular shir, but I'm giving a... based upon the hesped I gave at the funeral, which is very brief, based upon that, I'm giving a much greater analysis of my mother's life, and I want to respond to Nicham Avel that I've received from across the world. It should be Be'ezrat Hashem, a fascinating and a worthwhile tribute to my mother. And at the conclusion, I'll make a siyum of Masechet Chulin, which is Minashamayim Zichini. I can't believe it, how it all worked out. And we'll be able to say the great Kaddish. Now, what I asked them to do for tomorrow, I invited Amit women because they wanted me, my mother was very active in Amit, and they wanted me to give the hesped there, but I didn't want to knock out the class, and I think here it'll get wider coverage, because all the people who wrote to me from across the world will at least be able to hear it on the website. So I asked them to leave in the desks on the first two rows, and the rest of the room put in another 20 chairs so that if some women come, we can have a women's section and enable them to listen as well. So those are the plans for tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem. It's still a busy week for me because Tuesday I want to go to the American consulate, and I've already become an expert, and I'll let you know whether I succeed at how to report a death. You might think it's so simple to report a death. No, it's not so simple at all. So I hope after Tuesday I'll be smiling. And Friday, Be'ezrat Hashem, is Takamat Matseva, which we're limiting just the family, because where my mother's buried, it's impossible. There's no way to stand there. It's a low pashut. It's a whole area totally filled in. When my father died 31 years ago, my mother bought the plot next to him. And since then, everyone has died and everyone is buried there. And just that one plot was left for my mother. And it's very hard to stand. So we're hoping we can get most of the family. Again, it's Friday. We picked it purposely so that those in the army can get out and come home for Shabbos and make the Hakamat Matzeva Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, so what did we do today? We dealt with responsible literature, essentially. We picked up at the start of this year and last week's year, we went into the Mishnah Berurah, we went into the Aruch HaShulchan. Once again, we alluded to Dr. Lopez, Rabbi Dr. Nathan Lopez Cardoza's challenge. And look, it's if he is right, then the Rambam's Hakdamah of the Mishnah Torah is totally incorrect. My Rebbe is incorrect, and everything I've taught over the last 50 years is incorrect. I stand very strongly that we have difference of opinion, but halacha ultimately must crystallize. Heskim alem kol Yisrael. Otherwise, we wind up two people, three people, four people, and you see hashkafa-wise what's going on. Charedim, semi-charedim, light charedim, chadalim, tzionim datiyim. Rakefet is complimented. The Jerusalem Post called them a true religious Zionist. Baruch Hashem. Okay. When it comes to Shelet and Shuvot, we spoke about three different types of Shelet and Shuvot and three different types of answers. This has set the stage for Rav Ovadia Yosef, because what I've said to you until now begs one tremendous, deafening question that implodes upon every posek in the world. Who is right? Who is wrong? The Sephardic approach, a Dat HaMizrach approach, or the Lithuanian approach? Don't come to class next week unless you're prepared to see how Rav Ovadia chops off the heads of the Lithuanian world and why. I also want to mention that next week, at long last, after 2 years of lectures, we are hitting Das Torah. And months from now, when we finish the lectures, either you owe me, as the Rebbe used to say, a fleshel bramfen or a fleshel of alcohol. Take your choice. Now, if anyone wants the article on Rabbi Bina, this is the article. It's very fascinating and it's worth a long discussion. But I can only tell you, Rabbi Bina means well. That's his method of teaching. He's a Litvak who never grew up. He shoots from the hip, but he means well. I know him. And the proof is that a few Talmidim complained, but hundreds came to his defense. Is Rakefet like that? When I taught on a collegiate level, I was a waste of time. I was the nicest guy in the world. I never got angry. I was a softy. No, not everyone can be like Rabbi Bina. Which method is right? It's no right, no wrong. Every student has choice in life. Yitzchak, this is for you. Rav Usher Weiss, he is riding high, and he is fascinating. I just want, Yitzchak, yeah, you can take this and get an idea of the esteem in which our generation is held around the world. I just want to tell you that are you watching these? Do you have views? This is the Odd Couple and Up in Arms. This is Danny Kaye and Dinah Shaw, both Jewish. Danny Kaye. I yet had the schut to see Danny Kaye in person. Well, tomorrow I'll tell you who else I saw in person because of my mother. But Danny Kaye I saw in person in the King David Hotel. Some friends from America took us out. These were years when we were starving, you know. It was terrible after the Yom Kippur War. And they took us into the steak room in the King David Hotel. And I was still eating red meat at the time. And let me tell you, what a night. And sitting in a corner, I saw a person sitting with his back to everyone else. And I saw the waiter hopping over every 5 minutes and bending over like it's royalty. And they told me that was Danny Kaye. And when he walked out, I recognized him 100%. I didn't want to disturb him, but if I could have, I would have invited him to my shiurim. He was Kaminsky, Danny Kaminsky. His mother, his aunt were actresses in the Yiddish theater, and he had a good Jewish neshama. Dinah Shaw was born, she was Taka born, something like Dinah Shore, I believe, S-H-O-R-E. Or she was born S-H-A-W, she spelt it differently. She's given, I don't ask that what later in life, the way she lived. But maybe there was a little Jewish cognizance there. But that was America, and America that's long since gone. What I said to you about Satmar Rebbe Reb Zalman attacking the Belzer Rebbe. So my Talmud, who's the head of psychological services at Belz, sent me an email with the whole inside story. So it's just what I told you in class, that Reb Zalman attacked the Belzer, but Reb Arla is walking hands in hands with the Belzer. So once again, I stand on it that if your name is Aaron, Hevi Mitami Dav Shel Aharon, Nur Ehova Tabriyat, be a decent, shake hands, smile, and ultimately be makarav them leTorah Hashem Tamima. Until we meet tomorrow at Nechemya 9 a.m. Das Vedanya.